And joining us today on Perspectives is Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is a New York Times bestselling author of various historical fiction novels, but he just came out with a nonfiction book on Waterloo, and it's a very interesting book. And if you're a fan of Bernard Cornwell, you're familiar with some of his other works, and we're very fortunate to have him here with us today for half an hour. So we're going to discuss not only the new book, but also some of his other works, and just get to know Bernard Cornwell, the person. Bernard, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Louis.
Now, as I mentioned before, you have written various nationally acclaimed, internationally acclaimed books, and of course, the best-selling Saxon Tales, which include The Last Kingdom, The Pale Horseman, Lords of the South, Sword Song, The Burning Land, Death of Kings, The Pagan Lord, and most recently, The Empty Throne, and the Richard Sharp novels, among others, and of course, the recent one, as I mentioned, Waterloo. So tell us a little bit about, have you always been interested in these type of stories and this type of fiction and King Arthur and the knights and all that?
Well, I think people always say, you know, you write what you want to read. And I always read historical fiction when I was growing up. I mean, I loved historical fiction. When life sort of took a rather strange turn and I needed a job and I couldn't get a green card here in America, I said to my wife, don't worry, darling, I'll write a book. And the only kind of book I wanted to read, obviously, was historical fiction. So that's what I wrote.
I know that when I was a child, you know, we look up to all these great things like the knights, the soldiers, all these historical heroes. And we of course, pretend that we're them. So when you were a young lad, was that something that perhaps you were always not just reading, but also playing those kind of games?
No, I probably didn't when I was a child. I had a rather strange childhood. But what really got me interested was the Hornblower books by C.S. Forrester, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are very familiar with. And I read all the Hornblower books, and then, you know, there were 11 of them, and then there were no more. And I started to read the nonfiction histories about that same period and thought, my God, there's wonderful stories here about the British Army instead of about the British Navy. So I think that's where it came from. I think it really does owe an awful lot to C.S. Forrester.
Now, Bernard, when you're writing historical fiction, and I know you said you're a big fan of it, and so am I, but I guess you have to be careful as an author because you're writing fiction, but at the same time, it's historical fiction, and some people are going to read that and say, wait a minute, these facts are wrong, or I wonder if this really happened, and stuff like that, because you're always going to have people like that.
Oh, yeah, you always have a helpful reader. I always say that, look, I'm not an historian, I'm a storyteller. And yes, you have to stay true to history, of course you do. You have a duty to history. But really, I think historical fiction is a gateway to history. And it also depends entirely what you're writing. I mean, if you're writing a story that's set in, you know, I've written two books set in the American Revolution, you cannot play with the facts. You've simply got to keep them. We have so many sources, we know what happened, and you must stick to the facts. But if you're writing about the Saxon period, which I'm doing right now, we don't have many facts. So you can make an awful lot up. So, you know, it really does depend entirely what you're writing. But, yeah, you do. You must stick to the real history. And where you change something, you make a confession of that in the historical notes at the end of the book.
As I mentioned earlier, the book that you just wrote was Waterloo. It's the history of that battle, but it's also a nonfiction book. It's a historical book, but it reads very well, like a narrative. Tell us, when you decided to write this book, was it kind of I don't want to say scary, but perhaps because you've written historical fiction and all of a sudden you're going to write a nonfiction book? What steps did you take?
I'd always wanted to write this book. It's the only nonfiction book I want to write, which is the story of the Battle of Waterloo. And of course, this is the bicentenary year. The battle was fought on the 18th of June, 200 years ago. So it seemed a really good time to do that. I don't think I was frightened of it. I knew an awful lot about the Battle of Waterloo. The reason I wanted to write it is the battle is such an extraordinary story. It's such a dramatic story. It has dramatic characters. It's all over in just 4 days. The whole campaign is started and finished in 4 days. And it ends with this enormous climax, the Battle of Waterloo itself, in the evening of the battle. So it was a story that, in a sense, is just given to you. I mean, I think 90% of the difficulty of writing a fiction book is finding out what happens. In other words, finding the story. if you're doing a book like the one I just written on Waterloo, you don't have to do that. History provides it. The most difficult thing was to find the voices of the people who were there, the men and women who were on the field, so they could tell their story. I didn't have to tell it. I wanted them to tell their story.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is a New York Times bestselling author. The most recent work is Waterloo, and this is a nonfiction work. As you mentioned, the voices of the characters, it's amazing how people have jumped on the bandwagon now as far as audiobooks, because audiobooks are not just books read by people anymore. They're becoming almost like the radio dramas of the 1940s and 50s. And for these books, especially a book like yours, the voices are very important, but also the sound effects and everything else. And I have to say that the version that it was done of your book is incredible.
I have to confess, I haven't listened to it. I know that I read some of it, but I haven't listened to it. I'm sorry, Louis. That's terrible confession to make, but I haven't.
But as far as audiobooks, do you listen to audiobooks? And how do you get into the mood of putting yourself in that battle? And let's say, you know, what was Napoleon thinking when he was on this little island?
You read everything there is to read about it. I visited the battlefield probably, well, I have visited probably 20 times. In essence, because the thing about the Battle of Waterloo is there are so many books about it. In the English-speaking language, the two battles that have most books written about them is Waterloo and Gettysburg. And both have had far too many books, so why write another one? The reason I wrote this one was that I really wanted the reader to find out what was it like to be there on that awful day. Most of the books tend to be rather technical. They're about divisions and corps and battalions. You can very easily get lost in the language. You can easily get lost with the maneuvers. But what was it actually like? I mean, it was a dreadful day. It was a horrible day. So that, and no book has been written on Waterloo like that for over 50 years, just to try and give the experience of the men who were there.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the author of various other books, including The Warlord Chronicles. And I want to touch a little bit on those chronicles because, as I mentioned earlier, children have these fantasy games about King Arthur and the Round Table and the knights and dragons and all that. And you wrote a series on Arthur.
Yes, there are three of them. The first is called The Winter King. What I wanted to do there was to actually restore Arthur to a sort of real environment. Almost certainly that if he existed, and we're not even sure that he did exist, although I'm pretty certain he did. If he existed, he existed in the early 6th century. And so there were no knights in armor, and there were no great big stone castles. You know, all that has to be thrown out of the window, because what he was he was a British warlord. When I say British, I don't mean English, I mean British. The English were his enemies. I mean, this is one of the great ironies of the Arthurian stories, is that you know, they sort of people attached them to England, but the English were his enemies. So that was the real idea of it, just to simply to put Arthur back into the environment that he really did inhabit, if indeed he existed.
Perhaps the book that most people have probably read or heard about, and even there's been a movie about it, and that's Excalibur. Tell us about this.
Yes, the John Boorman movie, yes. Well, I mean, the thing about it is that I don't even know if he was a king. I mean, if he existed at all, the very earliest sources call him a Dux Balorum, which is translated is a warlord. There's actually no evidence there was a king called Arthur, although there is some evidence that there was a great soldier called Arthur. They're really sort of golden age. The British, who were the original inhabitants of the British Isles and who we now call the Welsh, were pushed out of what is now England by the Saxon invaders. The Welsh name for England is Llygia, which means the lost land. So Arthur was one of the last heroes who resisted this invasion. It seems like that he won a great battle called the Battle of Mount Badon. And people remembered him, and they remembered him as their last great hero. And then, as they went on to lose the land, they looked back with nostalgia at this golden age when they had Arthur. Stories come from. The stories are really about a lost golden age.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is a New York Times bestselling author of various fiction books, and this one that he just came out with, Waterloo. This book was first released in England, is that correct?
This was, yeah, back in September.
And what kind of reception did it get, or what kind of reviews did you get?
I got a very good one. It went
well,
to
good.
Number one and stayed there for a long time.
So,
but then, I mean, you'd expect the English to be a lot more interested in Waterloo than the Americans, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Or indeed the French. And it was, in fact, published in Paris about 2 months ago.
And do you find that through books like this, Bernard, perhaps like you mentioned earlier, that you wrote a couple of books on the American Revolution and then, of course, Waterloo. So do you find that perhaps the country that is not affected pays more attention, or because they want to find out more about that history than the
I really don't know the answer to that, Louis. I mean, all I can tell you is that I sell incredibly well in Brazil, among other places. So,
that's interesting.
You know, they have nothing to do with anything I've ever written. So I don't know what it is. I mean, yeah, I obviously you can tell from my accent that I'm British, although I've lived in America for half my life and I'm an American citizen now, but my books, I suppose, are really about British history. So it makes sense that the Brits are going to be rather more interested than anybody else. But as I say, the Brazilians and quite a lot of other countries are very fascinated by them too, I'm glad to say.
And do you think that perhaps some of the programs that are coming out now and some of the books for young adults, and not just for young adults, but because people are reading them and grabbing them, kind of like the Game of Thrones fantasy books, and where they do talk about knights and fighting armor and castles and all that stuff, but they mix a little bit of everything in. Do you have any comment on that?
They want, you know, people like that. It's just nice. I mean, I can remember some years ago, people said, oh, you know, young people don't read anymore. Then Harry Potter came out and every young person was reading like crazy. And Game of Thrones is terrific. It gets people reading. It gets people into bookshops on Amazon. And he writes incredibly well. In many ways, he is an historical novelist. It's just, as you say, the backgrounds of the history is totally fantasy. But as far as I know from what George has told me, it's really the sort of English Wars of the Roses, sort of written in some strange new environment.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is an award-winning New York Times bestselling author. And the recent book is a nonfiction book, and I believe it's his second nonfiction or first nonfiction.
First and only, Louis.
Okay, first and only, okay.
Yes.
Waterloo, but as it's interesting, as Bernard mentioned, as had, I think, David McCullough mentioned the same thing, and another historian mentioned that you write what you want to read. And, of course, as Bernard mentioned, he has always been fascinated by this battle, so he wrote the book Waterloo. But he's also the author of various other books that have strong following. And let's talk a little bit, move up a few years from the King Arthur to 1356, and that's the title of actually one of your best books, according to some of the reviews.
Well, this is the Hundred Years' War. Remember the history of England and subsequently of Britain is often a rivalry with France. You know, the famous battles at Agincourt, Crecy, Trafalgar, and Waterloo, all of them fought against the French. The Hundred Years' War was fought way, way back, and this is a time of knights in armor. I mean, King Arthur wasn't, but this was. These are guys wearing 70 pounds of plate armor. And it was a war that lasted 100 years. It really ended in French victory, but on the way there were these quite extraordinary battles. And 1356 tells the story of the Battle of Poitiers, that the French king was taken prisoner. So it was actually the fourth there were four books about that 100 years war. What's interesting about Waterloo, I think, is that many people call the 18th century the second 100 years war, that really for almost the whole of the 1700s, rather. Britain and France were fighting. And this, again, gives Waterloo its importance because Waterloo is a punctuation mark which abruptly ends that 100 years of warfare between the two countries.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. He is a New York Times bestselling author. And most recently, the book is Waterloo. Do you find, Bernard, that when you're writing a nonfiction book, and perhaps even when you're writing historical fiction, that you have to overcome some of these myths and stereotypes that people have about Napoleon, about King Arthur, about the British Army, the English Army, the French?
Well, again, there are myths and there are myths. I mean, there are endless myths about King Arthur, and he really does exist in a realm of myths, so you can sort of more or less leave him there. I don't know if people have that many myths about Napoleon. We know so much about him, and people either love him or hate him. I think in many ways he's a very great man. He's a very enlightened ruler. He's an extremely intelligent man. The problem with Napoleon is I think he was in love with war. He really was in love with war. And He didn't really care what damage that war did. He was very easily bored, and I think he liked the risk and the gamble of war. But yes, I mean, there are certain bits. I guess that you always, that the, in, say, 1356, or the book called Agincourt, the myth is that the English longbow won the battle. Well, you know, you look at it, you find out that's actually not quite true. I don't think there's too many myths at Waterloo.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell, and as he mentioned, Waterloo. He just wrote a book, a nonfiction book, about Waterloo, and this is his first work of nonfiction. As I mentioned earlier, it reads very well like a narrative, like a novel, so you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, this is another historical book with a lot of dates, a lot of stuff like that. It reads very well. And throughout the book, I guess I want to say that you involve us, you introduce us to a lot of the characters that perhaps people have known about. But as you mentioned, the diaries of Emperor Napoleon, Duke of Wellington, you bring it everything back to life, and the battles especially.
And well, and also some, you know, some of the ordinary soldiers who were there.
We yes.
It's not just the leaders. One of the things that gives the battle its enormous piquancy is that nobody in 1815, absolutely nobody, would have denied that Napoleon and Wellington were the two greatest soldiers of the age. They were both 46. They'd both been fighting since they were about 20 years old. They'd both fought many, many battles. Everybody knew that these two were the greatest generals, and they had never, ever fought each other. They're the two top seeds, and they meet there. So, yeah, we do have a lot of what they said about the battle, but what pleased me is how much we have of, if you like, I hate the word ordinary, but, you know, the ordinary soldier. And they left their memories, too. And of course, they're very different memories. For most of the men involved, all they ever saw was smoke. You're on this dreadful day, people were dying all around you, and you looked towards the enemy, all you saw was a thick bank of smoke being lit by flashes of gunpowder. And one soldier said, well, all I did was shoot at the flashes all day. And I really did want the book to be told by these people who were there, including some women who were there.
And I believe you did a very good job on that. And the fact that when somebody is affected like that, I think the reader, perhaps at least from my perspective, takes more interest because now he's reading it from his point of view. He could be out there. She could be out there.
Yeah, and it's not just the heroes. I mean, there's one of my favorite people in the whole book is a British weaver. And this poor guy should never have joined the army. He simply wasn't cut out to be a soldier at all. And he gets horribly wounded about five times, and then in the end, I mean, he's lying on the ground, and the French steal his trousers. And, you know, I mean, that was his Battle of Waterloo, was being attacked by the French, being wounded four or five times, and then having all his property, including his pants, stolen. You know, a battle is made up. The Duke of Wellington said afterwards, you can't tell the story of a battle. It's like trying to tell the story of a dance. Too much is happening at the same time. But you can give sort of vignettes of the battle, of what it was actually like to be there. Now, I mean, there are obviously some heroes on both sides, but there's also people like our weaver, Mr. Hasker, who ends up losing his trousers.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. He is a New York Times bestselling author. The recent book is Waterloo. It's his first nonfiction book, and it's about the Battle of Waterloo. And a very descriptive, very easy to read narrative. As Bernard just mentioned, you can read the story from a soldier's point of view. And what he just said now, the weaver, you know, you can, I guess, tell your grandkids, great-grandkids, your grandpa lost his pants in the war or whatever.
Poor guy.
Yes, a big diary. Now, let's go back a little bit to, because another series of your books that are doing very well and have done very well are the Sharp series. Tell us about those.
Well, the Sharp series, very early on, I talked about Hornblower. Hornblower, of course, written by Theodore Forrester, is the story of a British officer who fights for the Royal Navy against Napoleon. And I guess just to fill in the background just a tiny bit, I used to be, I had a proper job. I was a television producer in England, and then I met an American, a blonde, and we got married, basically. But when I came to America, I couldn't get a green card, so I said I'd write a book. So I thought, well, what book do I write? And I thought, well, why not do the Hornblower books on land, tell the story of a British army officer fighting Napoleon? So that's what the Sharp books are. And I'm very fortunate they were made into a TV series with the great Sean Bean. And it's a series of 21 books that follows a soldier right the way through the Peninsular War and indeed Waterloo.
And you also touch upon in another set of books about on the Civil War. Is that correct?
Yeah, Yes, and which one day I'll finish. I think there's five of those, which is also another fascinating period.
And just for, I'm sure our listeners are very well aware of this, but sometimes titles could be misleading or topics, but just to let people know that these are books about the Civil War and not the Coffee Wars, because it's the Starbucks series.
Right, yes, or some people say the War Between the States, right, the War of Northern Aggression, whichever you want to call it.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is a New York Times bestselling author. His most recent book is Waterloo, The History of 4 Days, 3 Armies, and 3 Battles. Bernard, tell us a little bit more about the Waterloo book, because what's interesting, as you just mentioned, is telling the story from the commoners. And again, I don't like that word either, but these are not the heroes. These are not the officers, the leaders. These are the people, ordinary people, who may be us reading. And you take a lot of those little vignettes from Waterloo and bring them out because people might have ignored them or not paid attention to them.
Well, not so much. What was it like to be there? It was horrible to be there. By 8:30 that evening, it was a Sunday evening, and it was almost the longest day of the year, so it stayed light until 10 o'clock up at that latitude. But by 8:30 in the evening, there are over 200,000 men trying to kill each other in a very, very small space, only about 4 square miles. There are over 350 heavy cannon firing inside that space. There's cavalry, there's infantry. It was a slaughter yard. One British officer said, "I've never heard of a battle in which everybody died, but this looked as if it would be the first." It really was a horrible day of carnage. And the tone after the battle is not very triumphant. Although the British won, with obviously the help of the Prussians, the people who survived the battle talk about it in rather shocked sadness, because the casualties were so great. The wounded were left on the field. Some of them weren't rescued for over 5 days. Before they got any kind of medical help. But the whole thing is quite horrible.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is the author of various books, historical fiction, but his most recent one is a nonfiction book, and it's Waterloo. You also have written, historical fiction can be thrilling, can be mysterious, exciting, on the edge of your seat, and you've written several thrillers as well. Was that, did you have to do anything different as far as changing the word, the way the story is told?
Well, I think the big difference if you write is that you're not given an ending. I mean, almost always when you write an historical novel, you're working towards a big historical event, so that gives you the ending of the book. So in that sense, it was a lot more difficult. But I stopped doing the thrillers. I found I was much happier writing historical novels, and I think I'll keep on doing that.
And what about the short stories, Bernard?
There's a few. I find writing short stories very, very difficult. I think a lot of people do. I wrote some, I don't know, about 20 years ago, mainly for a newspaper in Britain, but that's it. I'm not going to do any more.
You mentioned earlier that the fact that when people were saying that children were not reading, Harry Potter hit the bookshelves and everybody started reading again. But now, because books are accessible in all kinds of mediums, whether it be social media, an e-book, an iPhone, a Kindle, a Nook, your computer, they're everywhere, and audiobooks. So as far as that going on there, do you have to keep in mind anything when you're writing your book? Like, for example, if it's an audiobook, do you have anything to say as far as
the
editing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure, and I've never ever heard anyone suggest that one should do that. My job is basically, as I see it, is to tell a story, and that's what you do. You tell a story. And if you tell the story well, then it'll be adapted for an audiobook or anything else. And I don't, as you say, it might be, like radio drama today. But they also get adapted for television. The Saxon books you were mentioning, they're going to be seen on your televisions this fall. I don't know quite which channel yet, but there's a new series made by the people who make Downton Abbey. It's called The Last Kingdom. And again, it's you just tell a story. And stories are eminently adaptable, whether it's television, radio, theater, or whatever.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Bernard, because a lot of the BBC produced do you want to say, programs, documentaries, whatever, are being watched a lot by Americans, and especially ones like Downton Abbey, Call of the Midwife, a lot of those. And it, because they're BBC, a lot of people used to stay away from them because they thought, oh, this is public TV, it's educational TV, I want to be entertained, not educated. But all that has changed.
I guess it has, yes, especially with something like Downton Abbey. But you know, a good story will come through. I mean, you mentioned Game of Thrones. I mean, there it is. It's storytelling. It's just storytelling. And the same thing with Harry Potter. It's storytelling. And storytelling is old as humanity. And I don't think it really matters much whether it's a book or an e-book or an audio book or a television. It's what people want is a story.
Bernard, as far as you as a writer, what do you like to read or what are you reading now?
I tend to read an immense amount of nonfiction. I mean, that's what I've right now I'm reading a book called Pagans, which is about the early history of Christianity and its rival faiths. And I read an immense amount of nonfiction. I'm not very good at reading historical fiction because if you spend all day writing it, you honestly don't want to spend your evenings reading it. which is a pity because I used to like it a lot.
And so, obviously, it's not obvious, you shouldn't assume anything, but when you're reading nonfiction, a lot of this is probably for research that you're doing for other books.
Well, it's unconscious research. I always say that research is a lifelong activity. You know, if you say, how long does it take to research a book? Well, the answer is you don't know. I mean, when did I start researching Waterloo? Probably when I was about 15 years old. And that, believe me, is far too long ago. I don't even want to think how long ago. but, you know, since then, I have read literally hundreds of books on that period. So, yeah, it's unconscious research, and you're doing research all the time. I do like the novels of people like John Sanford. I enjoy him hugely, so I'll read that for entertainment. I mean, we're going away for a couple of weeks, so I've got two of John's books to read while we're away.
We're visiting with Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is a New York Times bestselling author. We have a couple of minutes left here, Bernard, so if you wouldn't mind sharing with us perhaps a website that people can go to find out more about Waterloo, but
yeah,
also other books.
It's Bernard Cornwell, which is all one word, bernardcornwell.net.
bernardcornwell.net. And, yes, and you have also clips from some of the TV shows, correct? At least one of them I saw?
I believe they do, yes. Although there's always copyright problems with that. I mean, certainly there's some small trailers there, I'm sure.
So you started working on Waterloo when you were 15, you said, so a couple years ago. do you have anything in the back of your mind now that perhaps you're floating around for your next book?
Well, no, I need to finish these Saxon books. I mean, that's the thing that I have to do. So that's what I'm working on now, and I'll probably keep doing that for another 2 or 3 years, and then maybe look for something else after that.
Well, Bernard, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to visit with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been visiting with Bernard Cornwell. Bernard is a New York Times bestselling author of various historical fiction books, but he just came out with a book, nonfiction, his first nonfiction, and this is on the Battle of Waterloo. And you can find more information at bernardcornwell.net. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Belinda Fernandez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.